The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 495. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Just like a prayer, I'll take you there.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
And Brett Murdoch.
What up, people?
All right, you already know, back with another one. All right, I'll say this now, and I'll say it again halfway through the show. You know, halfway through the show might be 15 minutes from now. We'll see. We only got a couple questions, handful, I should say. So if you got any more gaming questions for us, let us know now or forever hold your peace and all that good jazz. I'm just reading these in order here, so I don't know if there's going to be any themes tonight, but we shall see.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right. Kishak starts us off. Are evil playthroughs of games not as rewarding gameplay story-wise compared to being a good guy? I played many CRPGs, and I've never been tempted to do an evil playthrough because being good offers better rewards throughout the game. It's a good question. I actually kind of, in my experience, I agree with that. Because, like, you want to play as a bad guy, but then when you play as a good guy, you actually get more rewards. You get, like, they give you more shit. I'm like, I wish it would be better balanced. You know what I mean? So you get equally good rewards. But Brett, I definitely want your take on this. I know you like playing as a bad guy.
Oh, I love evil playthroughs. They're my favorite.
Yeah. But what do you think about the fact that, do you feel that way that you don't get as many rewards compared to like the good playthrough?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you're kind of going for, I don't want to say realism, but more balance, like the bad thing should probably offer better rewards.
Yeah.
But there's some games that have kind of balanced it right. And a lot of times, like, the thing you get for the bad rewards is more like, you know, the stuff that you're going for anyway. So, you know, that's helpful. Also, good games like CRPGs like Baldur's Gate, I'd be like, hey, do you want that weapon? Well, you gotta kill that person. Is there a better way? Nope, not really. You're gonna have to do some devious shit if you want that. So that's always a... My bigger beef, honestly, than the quest balance reward is, like, the ham-fisted moral narrative of most of the stuff. Like, do you want to help this villager or murder this puppy? And you're like, those are my two choices? Well, I don't really want to do the puppy murdering thing, but I'm going to steal from everybody. And they're like, oh, yeah, you can steal from everybody and still be good.
Like, well, yeah. also, there's some games that put those choices in certain colors. Like, one is blue. One is red, so it's like sort of guiding you that way as well.
You're never really fully evil when it comes to a lot of those games. You're just kind of like mean good. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still sort of doing the right thing. You're just doing it in a, you know, in a more asshole-y way. You know,
yeah, you're gonna do the right thing, but in a smart ass way. Like I like how Mass Effect did it. Right, full renegade, 100%.
Yeah, but I'm glad you brought up Mass Effect because I feel that's the game where it's like, hey, you get more rewards when you play as the good guy, even though playing as the bad guy is more fun, you know? Yeah. But you're right. It does feel like in Mass Effect where it's the same Shepard. It's just the bad guy version is like, oh, he woke up on the wrong side of the bed that day, you know?
He's a little bit more of an asshole. Like my issue with it is not the other thing, is that if you decide to just sort of play the way you sort of want to play,
yeah, like, you really don't get anything good. You know?
Yeah, you don't get anything because like you have to pick one side because it's like, okay, this one moment, you know, I don't like this fucker. I'm going to shoot him in the head. That's it because he's being a dick, you know, but you can't, doesn't really reward any of that. You have to literally, like, you're either a good root, you're the bad root.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. Like, yes, being evil, specifically in Mass Effect, doesn't reward as much as good, but it rewards you a lot more than if you're just waffling around, you know? If you go pure evil, you will get stuff. What's up, Chris?
No, I agree with that. Like, I went full Paragon in Mass Effect. Except there was only one mission where that motherfucker in that building, I shot him in the face. I shot him out the... I was like, nah, fuck it. I'm not walking away from this. I'm not forgiving this.
That's funny, man.
But everything else, because I wanted to make sure that I kept the team aligned. So Paragon, it was easier to defuse situations.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, if you go with the evil one, it's like, yo, half my team is dead.
You know? Oh, yeah, they kill each other, or you killed them.
It's like, yo, all these motherfuckers are dead right now, you know? But again, you do have some fun when you're evil. You punch in that reporter in the face all the time. or in Mass Effect 2, you're going through the building, this guy's talking shit, so you just push him out a window, and he dies. Damn. But punching the reporter, he can't get away with that in the games anymore, you know? Hilarious. Yo, Carlos, you got anything you want to interject here?
Not as much. Just only I don't really play as the evil person, or quote unquote what the stereotypical evil person would do. Because I mean, when you play a game, when I play a game, I just try to do whatever I think I would do. Like I guess that's the whole point of role playing. Like if you're trying to get into a situation that they would put yourself into, so I would just kind of normally do what I think I would do if I was put into that world. I wouldn't really think about, oh, is it the rewards gonna be better if I take this path? I don't really think about that when I play games.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, moving on here. Another one from Kishak. With Paramount not renewing the Halo TV show, is the Halo IP still salvageable, or has the IP degraded so much it would take a miracle to revive it? We've been saying this for years. This franchise needs to go on a vacation, a long vacation, you know, and they need to figure out some way of making it viable, because, you know, how that Call of Duty exists. Remember how for years it was always like people were trying to make the Halo killer, then the Halo killer turned out to be Call of Duty, and it wasn't even trying to kill Halo. It just did it naturally, you know? Remember Killzone was supposed to be a Halo killer? Halo was Haze. Haze, another one. It was a long time where everybody was trying to outdo Halo, but Halo kind of got left behind, and it feels like archaic compared to like modern first-person shooters. But again, this is something we've been talking about on this show for fucking a long time. It's like, Halo, you need to be put on ice, because it ain't working, and people aren't like, you know, missing the franchise or anything, at least with the games, you know? Real quick, Asin Yodik on YouTube with the dollar. Appreciate that.
Yo, thank you.
But yeah, what do you guys think? Chris, you know, you like Halo. I call it, you go next. I know you like Halo too. Chris, what do you think of Halo? Should it go on a break?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Infinite is a disappointment. The show is trash. Like, I shed no tears for this fucking show. That's fucking garbage. So screw that shit. I didn't care. Two seasons was too much.
Yeah.
Too much. There's no way. Like, Microsoft did better with like those short like DVD specials, like The Fall of Reach and the little animated ones. They kind of did an animatrix with Halo. Those type of things were good, right? But Halo's kind of fallen off. It needs a fucking break. You're absolutely right. But that show is trash. I don't even count that shit. Like, I don't even want to think about it. So as far as I'm concerned, that's like that's as trash to me as fucking modern Star Trek.
Oh, shit.
Garbage.
Oh, man. Carlos, what do you think? I know you were Mr. Halo back in the day.
Yeah, I feel like it needs to be put on ice. I mean, I know the video game, they probably can't, just because they feel compelled and they have a studio that's only dedicated to make a game, to make a Halo game. So it's not like they're just going to put them on ice too. So I think as far as a TV series, I don't even know why we need one. Especially when the protagonist is someone that's not, you know, I mean, he's kind of boisterous, but he's not like that much of a character. You know, Master Chief is just kind of like, you know, cool guy, kill people. It's like, let me finish this fight, Cortana, and all that stuff. There's not much depth into him. Like, the reason why you create these TV shows is to, you know, create depth into the characters. And no one really cares about seeing what he looks like. Like, that's not the point of Master Chief in Halo.
Yo, not only do you see his face cheeks, but you also see his ass cheeks.
Oh, exactly. Well, there's no point. There's no, you know, Like, no, do we, in the video games, do they make even inkling about him, about his sexual life? Like, I'm pretty sure the TV show would try to do that stuff.
Yeah. Well, in the TV show, he fucks. You know, people are like, what the hell is this? You know?
Yeah. So I just feel like there's really no need for Halo TV show. I can understand. I mean, like Chris mentioned, the Fall of Reach, that as like a, I think about it like as an OVA kind of type of thing that would be kind of cool, but I never really thought about it as a live action. I just feel like it would take too much money to make to justify that type of a movie / TV show, and I don't feel like anybody is good enough to make it that would be willing to make a video game like that
or
a movie.
I would like just that. Counter that with the budget for these two seasons of this show, probably way more than a singular movie that you could portray Reach. I agree with you, except that I think a guy like Neil Blomkamp could have done that movie.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Absolutely. District 9 guy?
Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe. He does have some pedigree when it comes to that type of stuff. Just doing sci-fi in general. I don't know. I mean, that would be an interesting one. I mean, honestly, Tony, you saw this article with Christopher Nolan. I don't know if it was rumors or legit, but Christopher Nolan could do it, but he wouldn't do a Halo show. I'm pretty sure he'll just do like an executive producer type of thing if he likes it. But I don't think he would. I mean, if they said, "Hey, Christopher Nolan is doing a Halo movie," I'm all in. I don't need to ask any questions. I don't care. I don't care what the movie's about. It's Christopher freaking Nolan. If Denis made it, you know, there's if freaking James Cameron did it, you know, you got some directors that obviously have, you know, a track record that is to be respected. But this whole thing with making a TV show on Paramount, because they have the Halo IP and Paramount streaming service is now a thing, so we need to put as much content on it as they can. So that's why Halo show exists in the first place, because they couldn't make a Halo show for the past like two decades. So, yeah, it's just I honestly don't think there's any possible way for them to make a Halo show in the environment that Microsoft and Paramount and these types of companies are trying to make a live action show or movie. I just feel like there's just no way they can do it.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. All right, Foolish Pupil. It seems like they just need to focus on making a good Halo game instead of making it the next better installment. Yeah, I don't think 343 should be making those games anymore, man. They haven't proved anything, you know, at all.
Yeah,
I'll go ahead, Manny.
No, I mean, I definitely agree with that, where it's like, I feel like 343 hasn't, to be honest, they need to sort of do what the guys at Gears of War did. They need to sort of decide to go back to formula and really go back and, you know, remind themselves what a Halo game is. Every single outing seems to be like, you know, what was their first outing? Essentially just, was it Halo 3?
Not 343. I think the first one was, wasn't it 4?
Yeah, was it 4 was with with Spartan Locke, right?
Yeah. No, so
Spartan Locke was 5.
Yeah, so it
yeah, Spartan Locke was
five.
That? 5.
Spartan Locke was yes. 5.
So I'll give you the chronology of it. It's Halo Combat Evolved, which is Bungie. Yep. Halo Bungie. 2, Halo 3, ODST, mm-hmm. Reach, all of them Bungie. Yep. Until Bungie. Then, they went to Halo 4, and that was 343's first.
What was the deal in 4 that wasn't, you know, such a good? Oh, that was the one that had all the issues where they literally fired Ryan Payton and a bunch of other people off of the project and had to restart over again, wasn't it?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that was the one. So anyway, I think a lot of this situation is them. Not being able to distill what was Halo, you know what I mean, and sort of working from there, and then trying to figure out what the future is. A lot of it seems to be like, you know, it just doesn't seem to be catching it. Like definitely, like, you know, the Spartan Locke one, where they're like, okay, we kind of want to get rid of Master Chief. We want to sort of insert a new guy because there's no expectations on him, you know, but. I think, I think in general that they need to do what the Halo 4 should have been. What it should have been, like, a, you know, essentially a Halo game that was very close to the previous ones, you know, but didn't you know, obviously pushes the story forward, but just essentially takes that archetype and essentially buffs it up to its highest sheen. That's what that next one should have been, and then they work from that.
I mean, like, I got a question. Like lore wise, is there a reason Master Chief needs to be confined to like a body? Like, nobody knows who Master Chief is, do they? Like, at a certain point, like, could there just be like an AI? Like, is it an AI system that's downloaded into like several different bodies, or is it like a program? Like nobody knows. It could like
he's a guy.
I mean, yeah. we know that he's a guy, but that's kind of all that we know. And like, I feel like that could be adjusted. Like Doom Guy is a guy, and like that's not a problem for Doom games. And I know that there's more lore in Halo, and I get that.
But Doom Guy, but the power to Doom Guy, and just like the power of Master Chief, who's sort of like Doom Guy esque, is the mystery of what he looks like. If you remember the last game, they don't show you what Doom Guy looks like, even though you have little pictures of him and stuff like that. But he's always just the helmet. I feel like
Doom Eternal, they show him.
Oh, they do. They show the dude. Okay, but yeah. I mean, to be honest, the guy behind the helmet doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, it's kind of where I'm going.
It's just the mystery of that character that, you know, is the deal. But I mean, like, obviously Master Chief is, you know, what we call the badass vector, right? Like, you're stepping into this badass guy you haven't seen the face of, so he's sort of you, maybe not you, you know, and he just says awesome one-liners. But it's always the world around him that has all the really cool development, you know.
Yeah, I guess the whole point with this, Brett, is with at least with Master Chief's concerned, he's the last of his kind. So that's the whole purpose of him, and he does have a name. I think it was like John something,
John Smith.
There's novels.
I'm actually curious about this, and we don't have a whole lot of questions. So, like, what do you mean he's the last? Like, is he like a military experiment? I'm genuinely curious here.
No, there was he's the last the of whole that character.
The whole Spartan type of character. Was a program by the United Earth military. What I forgot the UNSC. It wasn't they were making super soldiers, right? So they took these kids and they fucking pumped them with drugs and put cybernetics in them and all sorts of shit to breed the Spartans. And they were this elite team, these elite soldiers. They all had power armor and AIs assigned to them and all this stuff. And they were treated horribly. Like, they were from childhood. They were pumped with drugs, had cybernetics put in them, trained. Some of them died in the program. And it was all run by this lady. I forgot her name. I think she's in the games.
Yeah, she's in Reach, I'm pretty sure. And then
she's in Reach. Yeah. So he's the last surviving Spartan. They've all died in combat or for various reasons.
The last one. All right. But I think he's also the last one in a lot of ways too. Like he's also one of the last of that type of protagonist too. You know? The faceless protagonist.
Yeah.
And also
I guess he really is.
The whole thing with this game, I don't know. I feel like over time I just got a different perspective over Halo. I just feel like they can't. Most video game franchises, you know, evolve into something or they die. Fallout was not a 3D game until it was a 3D game, and then it flourished. Grand Theft Auto, sort of the similar thing, was like a top down game. Now there's a 3D game, and then, you know, even God of War. Even people who don't like it, but it's still, you know, it became a massive success as its new iteration, and they've all evolved. I feel like most of those franchises, if they stayed the same, they would have died for the most part.
Yeah.
And Halo, it feels like they're just trying to recapture the essence of a 2000s game. There's just nothing that screams like they're trying to evolve. It's more like, hey, you know, we're gonna do the same Halo stuff, but we'll make it a sort of like a type of service game like everyone else does, and it just doesn't it seems like it doesn't fit. Like there's really no purpose. You're just getting the Halo cash cow, which is diminishing by a lot. It's not making as much money as they used to, and they're just trying to throw it back out. It's like the dude who only has like five hits and has a whole career out of singing those same five hits for the next 40 years. And I feel like that's what Halo's become. It doesn't really have, it doesn't really stand anywhere or differentiate itself from the competition anywhere as a video game. It's just there because we need a new Halo game. Gears is kind of the same way too. It's really similar to that, but Gears, the thing that Gears has is it's a little bit newer than Halo is, and those the games, even though they're kind of the same, they're even better. They're better than what Halo is doing, so that they don't get as much flack, but they're going the same direction.
Well, even Gears can kind of go generationally or kind of like a timeline, like Master Chief and a lot of Halo. Like, I agree with everything that you say. I don't disagree with any of it. I kind of want to propose the alternative here that, like, Halo didn't leave itself a lot of room to grow or evolve either. Like, there's you've tied yourself to a single protagonist. How many times can John Everyman save the world? You know what I mean? Like, it kind of reminds me of the movie that they were making inside Tropic Thunder,
mm-hmm.
where it was Ben Stiller's character, like, saving the world, like, number seven. Like, at a certain point, like...
Exploder?
Yeah, something like that. Like, it was at a certain point, like, it becomes kind of ridiculous unless you're telling a big, long, serialized story. And that's why even, like, a lot of, you know, like series or books or things like that, they'll kind of, if they're going to do that, they'll break into big arcs or trilogies or things like that. You know, they're not trying to tell a big story every single time. You know, sometimes it's sewn into a part of a bigger story or something like that. But you're not getting that with, I think, a Halo game. And it's tried. God knows it's tried. But it's always just kind of a rehash of the same story, is it? I mean, like, am I wrong here?
Not completely, but in a way, yes. Because Bungie, Halo ODST and Halo Reach did not have Master Chief in it, and they were successful games. Halo 5 didn't have Master Chief in it, so a substantial amount of the last couple of games, Halo games, haven't actually had Master Chief and told other stories. Halo Reach was a success because not only was Bungie making it, who's the best people at making Halo, but the story was incredible and people were mm-hmm. captivated by the story. Same thing, Halo ODST kind of changed the way Halo was played. It was just, it felt like a different franchise in a way, but with that sense of what Halo is. But you know, now with a 343 studio, it's like we've handpicked this studio and handpicked all the developers and creatives to make what we used to make. And that, you know, it's like giving a fucking Konami the Metal Gear license, which they have. And they're like, hey, make a Metal Gear Solid game. Make Metal Gear Solid 6. How the hell is that going to work?
Yeah, well, the only way to do that is really to recenter yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of have to make sort of a take the idea of Halo, you know, take a lot of things that are familiar about Halo and continue the story and essentially do, like I said, the polished version of whatever you could do. That, what does that even mean? That could also be making a remake. And I think that's what the aim for Konami is. They're taking a game that is a well-known game, arguably the first in the sort of franchise, and essentially re-reminding themselves as to what a Metal Gear game is. And then I think once they've gone through with the line of those games, then they'll come in with a new one for Halo. And I think the smart thing, even with Gears of War, is that they're going back to a point where in the story, obviously it's a point in the story you don't even need to really know, because everything you need to know about Emergence Day or E-Day is pretty much told throughout all the films, right? I mean, not the other games, sorry. But I think that's what they need. They need to remind themselves what Gears of War is in order to find out what the future of Gears of War is. And I think that's also sort of what needs to happen with them, with Halo. It needs, whether that means, you know, doing a remake of an older Halo game or essentially just doing a prequel game that fits within some of the other ones. So we're like, okay, what do we have around us? What are the walls? Okay, this is what we do when we make these games. But I also think the biggest issue might be also with the Halo franchise and the Gears of War franchise is the fact that there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. When it was just Bungie and it was just Epic, there was just those guys that made those games. Now you have a committee that says, oh, no, we don't want that. Oh, you can't do that. You know, like stuff like that. So there's even reports on this last Halo game. They only really got it in shape like not long before it even came out. What does that tell you? It tells you that there's a lot of issues.
By the way, Metal Gear is another franchise that reinvented itself multiple times.
Yeah.
Throughout.
Yeah. Because Kojima understood what a Metal Gear game was, right? And then he understood what it needed to iterate. That's why the later games became about Big Boss and all that stuff, right?
You know what really bothers me about this whole thing is that, and I think it's just another letdown with a 343, but like, goddamn, Halo doesn't already have a front row seat as kind of the spokesman for the goddamn console in and of itself. Like, it could be used to showcase system power. Like, it should be a showcase and a testament to the things that this console is able to accomplish. It should be a sales pitch to developers to come to the console and make things. Its value is so much more than simply the amount of times downloaded or the amount of times the game was bought. There is so much here that is brand representation that this should still be one of the best looking games available, full stop. You know, the same way Spider-Man is. Like, it's, yeah, Spider-Man cost a shitload of money, and did they necessarily make all that money back? It's close, but I don't think so. But again, like, that's showcasing to developers and the public the things that your platform is capable of, especially on a closed system like that.
Well, and I think that's the biggest thing that's happened this year with a lot of this generation of consoles, with the exception of Spider-Man, obviously. You know, the first Spider-Man that released on the thing was a game that was from the previous generation, right? So there was no real showcase until Ratchet and Clank released. And same with Halo, with the Microsoft. What did they release with? And then when Halo finally released, it was really just a whole lot of meh, which is insane to me. Because, yes, you are totally right. You need that title to say, okay, to people, this is why you own this thing, or this is why you should develop for this thing.
By the way, Spider-Man, be careful, man. Spider-Man is another one of those games that is in trouble to be, you know, going the way of the Halos if it doesn't reinvent itself.
Yeah.
I feel like it's got another game like this because, you know, we got Spider-Man 2018, we got Miles Morales, and we got Spider-Man 2, which are kind of pretty much the same game except, you know, different bosses and stuff. I feel like they have one more left to do the same thing. But if the one after that is the same thing, then that cash cow is gone.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Regarding the Halo, because I only played the first four games, but even when I was playing with Carlos, it's like, oh, we're doing the flood again? You know, they kept repeating that shit. So I don't know.
Well, that's what I meant. I didn't play Reach, and I only played a little bit of ODST. It's always been some iteration of the flood, hasn't it?
Kind of. At least the games I played is like, oh, here's the flood again. You know, here
only
we go.
The mainline Halo games.
Yeah, in the mainline games. Yeah. Like, oh, here's the flood.
Yo, Tony.
Yeah.
Remember when we were playing and you would get those you would get on those consoles and it'll glitch the game?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I don't know. CrowdStrike was on this video game.
Yeah, you know, shit. CrowdStrike, you know. Yeah, it's like, oh, here we go. It's this part of the game. Very interesting. All right. Thank you, Kishak. He asked us some extra questions. And remember, guys, if you guys want to keep the show going, ask us some more gaming questions. All right. Next one here. Who is the next best developer? Who is the next best developer for Halo in Microsoft's nest of developers? I think you should reword it as who should take over 343 because like saying the next best is suggesting that 343 is good. No, you know,
yeah, it suggests that they're the best, which they're not. Yeah. 343 isn't even the next best.
No, they're not. They're not. I'm pretty sure I've answered this before, but id, give it to fucking id, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Id would knock it out of the park, you know? So there's my answer. What about the rest of you guys? Yeah.
It could use a big franchise to work on, because like they keep making solid games. They're just not really keying off. And I feel like, you know,
what do you mean? The last two Doom games did pretty well for them.
Yeah, but what was the fucking the Brian loved the game, god damn it.
What, Wolfenstein?
No.
What, Warframe?
Rage.
Oh yeah, but that was a long time ago. Like I'm talking about
a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, like Wolfenstein and Doom Eternal, you know, are more recent. But you are right that the last Wolfenstein did not do that well. But Doom Eternal did. And they're coming out with a new Doom next year. You know, I believe it is next year. Ooh, and that looks hype as fuck too. You know?
What?
But regardless, id, give it to fucking id, they'll kill it.
Well, I got sidetracked. I feel like Rage is very close to a Halo game with some of the vehicle mechanics.
Yeah.
And just kind of general the way that the whole thing handles. But yeah, like it's...
Okay, that's a good point.
Definitely the Doom games do well. Forgot about Wolfenstein 100% honesty. Totally forgot about Wolfenstein though.
Yeah, yeah, the last... the first one they came out with was pretty good.
Oh, it was awesome. But then what was it? The New Order? I'm like,
yeah, then you kind of lost me. Yeah, exactly. You know? But yeah, I think we all agree here. It would be great.
I feel like playing a Halo game made by id would feel kind of similar to playing a Dragon Ball game made by Arc System Works.
Yeah.
Ooh. I don't know why, but I just feel like it'll kind of that, you know, that same feeling where it's like, oh, it just kind of works.
Yeah.
It's like it's exciting to have that combination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like
I agree with that. That's a good analogy. Yeah. All right. Good stuff. Moving on to another question from Mr. Kishak. A while ago, an Xbox spokesperson in the EMEA, I had to look this up. I don't know what the fuck that meant. Europe, Middle East, and Asia regions said Xbox's marketing isn't as blessed as Sony's. How do they, Microsoft, not realize how this would come off considering the amount, or actually, I don't know, I guess the person, how did they not realize how this would come off considering the amount they spent on the Activision Blizzard acquisition and Bethesda? Why is Microsoft so cheap to advertise in these regions instead of wasting time and money on limited edition controllers and Xboxes that you can only win in a raffle? I think it's one of those cases where since they historically do not do well in those regions, they don't try as much. But, you know, because we think about with Japan, right? They tried hard in Japan and it didn't take off, you know? But I do like your question. You know, it's like
they actually tried to push Game Pass in Korea.
Yeah.
And I don't know where that's gone. And China doesn't care.
Yeah.
I feel like the only market in Europe that works for Xbox is the UK.
Yeah.
Everything else is kind of Sony dominated. But I don't know. I mean, I get the gist of the controllers and stuff, but that shit doesn't take money from Microsoft to make. It's like, yeah, you make a controller like this, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, like a Deadpool controller and Wolverine controller. It's like, yeah, it doesn't take them much, you know? Yeah.
Well, it's a cost-benefit thing, man. Like, it's the same reason so much goddamn reality show is made, because it can cost nothing to make it.
Yeah.
You know, making a controller, that's nothing. Advertising, like, man, like, advertising is such a huge, like, up to, like, we've seen, like, 50% of a game's damn budget be advertising. Like it gets yeah, absolutely ridiculous, and that's when they're choosing to make cuts like that. And unfortunately, a lot of these decisions are made on, you know, what has made money in the past, what can we put the money into, what are we getting the most out of from the least input into. And so, like, you can get these kind of false viewpoints of like, yeah, well, they're just putting all of this effort and all of this other stuff instead of to where it matters. Like, yeah, they're really not putting all that much effort into that other stuff. They just keep pumping that well because it keeps making them money, and they're almost zero effort. So I agree that it'd be nice to see worldwide stuff, especially since Windows is so ubiquitous. You'd think that their gaming Windows as a gaming platform would generally be more well supported, but unfortunately, they lost that battle to Steam quite a while ago. And well, if they try and leverage that away from Steam, Steam has been ready to just pivot away into Linux forever. So that thread is an empty one. So
yeah, and I feel like it, having Xbox installed into every Windows machine is better advertisement than anything they could spend on. Just to make another analogy here, we're upcoming into a presidential election. The candidates are spending hundreds of millions of dollars in campaign ads. Most of them are going to a confined number of states and not every state. And there's a reason why not every state gets all the funding, because they already know how it's going to go.
Yeah.
So they know that it's wasted money. So for them, it's like, why put a budget into advertising in China if we're not going to get a return on investment there?
Yeah. Kishek also asked, isn't Xbox popular in Mexico? I don't know, but your question was specifically about Europe, Middle East, and whatever the fuck
Asia.
The
last one.
Yeah, Asia. Yeah,
it's decently popular in Mexico and in Brazil. Yeah, I mean it does have a pretty decent presence in those countries.
It also advertises there.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. All right. Last one here from Mr. Kishak. Dragon Quest, the Dragon Quest creator, said that as graphics become more realistic, it'll be difficult to have a silent protagonist. And this, the quote, if you make a protagonist who just stands there, they will look like an idiot. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Well, the Dragon's Quest creator, the who? The Dragon's Age or Dragon's Quest?
Quest.
Quest.
Ori, I believe Square. His name is. I agree with him. If you have like ultra realistic graphics and the characters are standing there not talking, it looks a little weird, you know.
That's why you don't do a realistic looking Dragon Quest.
Yeah,
you continue to keep it stylized.
But he's talking about in general, you know.
I don't know. I disagree. I don't often play a character that is me, but the ones that I do, when I pick a voice option and they read it back in an inflection that just sounds fucking weird, there's a disconnect. I would rather just read my options, select the one that I want, and then we all just move along in conversation as if I had said that thing. And that is still technically a silent protagonist.
It's still a weird one because like in Zelda, the Link doesn't talk, and it just seems like everybody's just sort of talking to themselves a lot. But I think I think it depends on the character. I mean, there's not a lot of characters right now that are really quiet, right? Like, everybody has a voice of, you know. Maybe more Japanese games have it.
I mean, this might not be the best example, but because it's stylized. But I mean, Elden Ring, the protagonist is silent.
Silent protagonist, yeah.
But that is a very stylized looking game too, you know.
I think the other thing is, it's like, yeah, like your guy has absolutely nothing to say about all of this.
Yeah,
everybody sort of infers from you.
Well, let me ask: are we referring to an unvoiced protagonist or a full on silent protagonist?
A full on silent protagonist, yeah.
Yeah, unless there, yeah, is well, I mean, it's always been weird. But in games, especially where you have some sort of agency or can make some sort of choice, the fact that you can do all that without, I guess, expressing it through voice is that, unless you're mute or like have had your tongue cut out or something, and even sometimes when they make a cheeky nod to it, like, oh, the strong silent type, I see, like, that's fucking weird. That's weird. That's like developmental challenge levels of weird. I don't even know how it became a trope, though, because
I was just thinking about this now, because like, if you think about it, I mean, there were some actual legitimate silent protagonists, but mostly I think that kind of came from, you know, when games started getting voices, because in RPGs, everybody was, you know, just, you have to read everything, including your character, right? Like you said, when you're talking and you select an option, your character is saying that, you know, but And that, but obviously when you get voice acting, then, and if your character doesn't say that, then it seems weird, but they are still saying it, you know?
But yeah, but here's the thing. In games like Elder Scrolls games, your the choice that you make is just responded to. It's never voiced out loud.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, I mean, you have to put some imagination to it, but your character is not silent, technically speaking. Like you said, Brett, he's still talking, you know? But I think the whole, because you never heard that term silent protagonist during like the Nintendo and Super Nintendo era. It was when games started getting voices that you really started hearing that term, you know?
Yeah, because like, you know, even then, like they would be weird for your character not to have any dialogue.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that was just odd even back in the day. It was an odd choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the question is really about voiced protagonists instead of silent, you know?
I don't like a voiced protagonist. That's why I know I probably stand on the weird side of this one. Like, you know, I like being able to make choice in video games, but I don't like my character being voiced because it doesn't sound like, if it's supposed to be me, the person driving that video game, it doesn't sound like me. It doesn't land on the inflections that I would use. It doesn't put the right emphasis on the right syllables. Mm-hmm. Everything feels kind of a little off, and there's a disconnect there. Also, I just, like, it's my internal monologue that is that voice, that I'm hearing it as I read, and maybe that's, you know, just because I fully have internal monologue, and some people don't, but I don't need somebody else to read off the thing that I just read in a different way. And God forbid it's, you say the thing, and then the character that is you paraphrases the thing. But it's not the thing that you meant to say at all. Like, you thought it was going to be said in a completely different way. You're like, oh, no, I didn't mean it to say it like that. That's, I didn't like that. I felt like, you know, my body just said things on its own. It's
That happened a lot in Mass Effect.
Oh, yeah. You know, a lot of paraphrasing. Dragon Age did that as well. It's like, why are we paraphrasing here? You know, say the thing.
Yeah.
Also, how would you consider Fallout in this conversation? Because it does a lot of ultra realistic type of stuff.
Yeah, what do you think, Brett?
It has a silent protagonist.
Yeah, well, it's got a silent protagonist in the sense that it's non-voiced, and that's where I prefer to land. Like, I'd prefer to read my part and then have everybody else talk. That to me honestly feels more natural. Maybe that's habit because I grew up, you know, playing video games, and to somebody else that would be shockingly weird, but to me, you know, like I hear it myself when I'm reading it, so I don't need somebody else to read it for me.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. Chris, you got any thoughts on a silent protagonist or unvoiced protagonist?
Well, going back a little bit, I think that the Dragon Quest creators, right, in terms of if you're creating a realistic rank, it'd be very difficult to pull that off, but just don't do it. Just make, you know, keep making your anime style games. I think that style of gaming is never going to go away, because look, if everybody jumped off that, you know who wouldn't jump off that? Nintendo.
Yeah.
Link is never going to talk ever, right? That's never going to change. So you can do that type of stuff. You just keep your stylized you know, things, and you have your you know, text selection or whatever, and it affects how the game goes, but that's it. You don't need the protagonist to talk. He's just a template for you, right? Now, I did enjoy Mass Effect. Like, yeah, it was paraphrased, but yeah, Shepard did talk. You're just choosing what he says, how he thinks. But I think there's room for both, right? Why not both?
Yeah. All right, good stuff. Moving on here. The last two questions of the night, unless we get any more. You know, I think we've done pretty well. Thank you for all those extra questions, Mr. Kishak. Dumeke, or as he calls himself now, Super Dumeke N64, which is pretty fun. Hmm. Although you got to realize, whatever name I originally called you as, whatever you change your name to, I will always call you that first one. So, sorry, you're always going to be Dumeke. You know?
Yeah, so if your name was... If your name was a Booty Buck Cheeks, you will always be Booty Buck.
That's it, you know. All right, man. How has gaming news and releases being kind of quiet lately impacted you guys? Are you still gaming? You know, by that he means playing recently released games or playing older games, or have you tuned out of gaming and doing other shit? I'll go down the line here. Manny, are you playing anything?
Yeah, I'm still playing Hi-Fi Rush. I'm working toward the Platinum Trophy. Apparently, I got so close to it, so, yeah.
There you go. What about you, Carlos? You know, I mean, I already know the answer, but go ahead.
Here's my answer. So it's a really specific case in my thing. I know we haven't had any gaming announcements or anything to get excited about until Wukong comes out in August.
You know, and we did just play Elden Ring. You know.
Oh no! Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Elden Ring. I'm still playing it.
Nice.
The Elden. It's one of those particular scenarios where this is one of the greatest games I've ever played. So I'm going to, you know, I'm exhausting the shit out of that game. I mean, I've been playing New Game Plus. I did, you know, I've gone through almost the entire game now. I beat most of the bosses. I still need to beat the capital and get to the mountaintops and the fire giant and then the Elden Lord and stuff. Like, I still need to do that part, but I've been going through a lot of stuff that I missed from the last one. I've been in the original game. I've been beating all the original bosses, and I've also been doing quest lines that I didn't do last time. Like, I didn't do there's this one chick, I forgot her name, but there's this one chick that has a quest line that I didn't do, and it takes you to places where it's like, oh shit, I didn't do this before. And it's fun, man. You know, more and more I keep asking myself the question. And I'm pretty sure some of you guys here in the chat and here in the cast have been thinking, it's like, is this the best game I've ever played?
Oh,
like I really have to think about it. Like, I'm like, you know, because only a few games ever get to this point for me. It's like the Fallout 3s, the Mass Effect 2s, the Halo 2s. Like, there's it's slim pickings, man. Like, well, on that Mount Rushmore, and this game has put itself on that Mount Rushmore for me. So I just, you know, I'm still playing the game. I put over 200 hours now on it, and I'm you know, I'm still enjoying it. So that's holding me off right now until Wukong for the moment.
Wukong. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to get into it because you already know my feelings about this generation. But yeah, I played Elden Ring with the fellas and had a good time. And I will be playing Wukong, which comes out pretty soon, you know. So, you know, obviously I'm not gaming as much as I used to. I think I've only played maybe 4 games this year. But they've been very, with the exception of Suicide Squad, which is absolute fucking trash. The games that I liked have been very good. Final Fantasy, Rebirth, Stellar Blade, which was stellar. And Elden Ring, and now and then Wukong. So Asia, thank you. You've been keeping me afloat this year because these Western games ain't doing it anymore, you know. But yeah, in general, gaming is not my primary hobby anymore. I just play, you know, when something kind of fancies me because it's very very difficult to get excited about what's happening in gaming. And on the flip side, I'll turn it over to Brett, who's on the opposite end of me when it comes to his gaming this generation.
Bro, I'm still eating good. I got leftovers stacked in the fridge. I got Baldur's Gate to finish, but I will start off by saying, Carlos, my man.
Hey.
Yeah, I've played same. You know, and I think what's weird is you know that up on the, you know, having to ask yourself that question. I was asking myself that question when Elden Ring came out. And, like, the thing that, like, got me was, I was like, yo, the hype for Elden Ring is, like, approaching critical mass light speed. It's just, am I getting too hyped? And then it arrived. And the answer was, no, I was not hyped enough somehow. And knowing that, I went in and I was like, okay. Like, I know Elden Ring has been, like, one of the best games I've ever played. So, like, logically, it's not too hard to say I should expect one of the best DLCs I've ever played. And like, but like, maybe that is dangerously hyping it. Still, somehow it surpassed my expectation. Again, I've been playing through Elden Ring a second time now, simply so I can go through the DLC a second time now. And man, my archaeologist ass has been going to work. Let me tell y'all, I'm figuring some shit out. And I don't know about all of you, if any of you have caught like anything more than the broad strokes, but it is super, super fucked up. Like, way more fucked up than you even think that it is fucked up. I'm pretty sure if I'm reading the room right, it's extra super duper fucked up.
Yeah. Again, I have no input when it comes to the lore. I have no idea what's happening, but I don't care. You know, I'm enjoying the ride. But that's cool, man. And then, Chris, what about you lately, man? What, you know, what do you feel about gaming? And how, and are you gaming less or more? Like, what's going on?
Well, I've just been gaming less because there's just less to get into. I have been very disappointed by this generation. lately, the only things I played is, well, I have to go back to Stellar Blade. But Stellar Blade, I played Pacific Drive, and I'm playing Elden Ring. Right, so right now I'm playing Elden Ring, and I'm doing the same thing as Carlos. I'm going around doing the quest lines. I found a second dancing line. I was like, "There's another one of you sons of bitches out here." Oh, yeah. And I just found a forge I never went to before. I just found a cave, and I was like, "Wait, there's a grace here. I didn't pop. There's a whole cavern in here I didn't go into." So I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I agree with Carlos. Like, it almost like, I can't bend my rule because it's a DLC. It doesn't count as a game to say it's game of the year, but it's fucking amazing. It is amazing. The whole experience is amazing. I look forward to things like, I want to play Monster Hunter Wilds next year. I want to play Wukong, you know, but that's about it. Like, everything he said, you know, I know Rich jokes about Concord and stuff. Western games have been trash.
They absolutely trash. Suicide
Squad. Yeah, absolute trash. Like, I'm not playing any of that garbage. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm not looking forward to anything from, like, EA or Activision. Nothing. I don't care anymore. Like, I'm just looking to Japan and Korea and whatever to give me what I need, because everything else is failing me. And that's why I'm playing less. Like, I know I'm busy with, you know, work and being a dad and stuff, but I still love gaming. Like, still want to play something, and nothing on our side of the fucking hemisphere is giving me anything to work with.
No, I agree, and I said this, you know, because we kind of get a version of this question every once in a while, and you know, the question originally was like, have you fallen out of gaming? No, my answer was gaming fell out of love with me. You know, like, I'm not really getting the kind of games I want anymore. I still love gaming, you know, like when I was in the Elden Ring, everything stopped. Like, I'm playing this shit right now, you know? Same thing with Stellar Blade and all that. But, you know, when Monster Hunter comes, you already know that's going to take over my life.
Oh, yeah.
But, no, but of course, I'm with you. Like, on this side of the pond, you know, we're not really getting the goods here. But it's okay. It's okay, because Asia's holding it down. You know, even the fucking Chinese, we're going to play a Chinese game soon, you know?
Yeah, we're going back to 83 over again.
Oh, man, you know?
I mean, where Japan and Korea are holding up the fucking video game industry.
Yeah.
I'm like, how many people are playing Flintlock right now?
Yeah. Let's be real. Flintlock, you know? Fuck out.
Another disaster.
Yeah. Concord, absolute trash, you know? All right, and then the last question of the night, kind of similar to what we just answered. There's a lot of negativity around gaming and other entertainment, such as the direction of the MCU. Don't get me started on that. To those looking from the outside, it may seem like the industry is in a bad place. What's something positive in gaming that each of the Throwdown crew is enjoying right now, if anything? Now I'll go in reverse. So, Chris, you start us off first.
What's something positive in gaming? I know, Elden Ring and Japan pulling the fucking industry up on its shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
It just kind of went over that. Like, it's Japan and Korea that the games I'm looking forward to, even China, you know? Yeah. So that's it. I'm like, oh, what am I looking forward to next year? Monster Hunter, right? Yep. Who makes that? Capcom. Well, you know, what else are you looking forward to? Wukong, China, Stellar Blade, Korea. That's it. Like, I don't have much else to look forward to. Like, one indie game that was made here, Pacific Drive. Yeah, it was all right. I wouldn't, like, recommend it. It's just, like, I enjoyed it. But that's it. Like, everything else coming out over here. I don't care about many big franchises. I don't care about Call of Duty. I'm not playing Overwatch. I'm not playing any of that shit. I just want a nice story, single-player narrative, but also you can enjoy it with your boys, you know. And here's the thing. I'm not even looking forward to GTA 6. I have no faith that game.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Yeah.
Yeah. Story wise, I don't think it's going to be solid.
Yeah. I'm very wary with that game. I agree with you. All right. Moving on here, Brett, what's a positive thing happening in gaming right now?
I mean, I feel like despite there being less games and like we have had an ocean of shit, but there have been really great pearls in there. And between like Elden Ring and a DLC to like Baldur's Gate and Last Remnant, you know, I feel like I've played some of my favorite games that I can think of within the last handful of years. And that should be the trajectory that gaming is taking in general. You know, you think, you know, they learn from the last things they did. You know, we get more power, better hardware, more experience, you know, better creative companies, theoretically. That should be the way that it goes. Unfortunately, life a lot of times goes the other way. But I will say some of the best games that I've played have been in recent memory. So while everybody isn't moving in the right direction, some people are. And those some people have definitely got a lot of notice in that same, you know, handful of years, you know, last handful of years. So, you know, it's the ship of the gaming industry takes forever to turn, right? So I think that the days of, you know, let's see how many microtransactions and what have you, I think that's gone. I think when Sony canceled all those free-to-play games, or all those live service games, excuse me, that was kind of the end of an era. It's going to take a while for that to show, but you don't just cancel half a dozen big projects. Like, that is an insane amount of money to flush down the toilet. And that lost cost fallacy would dictate that once that gets some momentum, it would be hard to stop that, because, you know, how are you going to justify all that money that you've spent, even if you're saving more by, you know, not putting out a failure? That's Redfall is evidence of that. So to kind of do that, Sony had to see the writing on the wall, and they flushed a lot of money down the toilet, even if they were early in development. So I feel like that really shows that maybe, just maybe, we've put the worst of it behind us. Maybe I'm being too much of an optimist on that one, but I'm really hoping that between seeing how terribly things like the Suicide Squad have failed and how amazingly things like Baldur's Gate have succeeded, that they're starting to figure out that just milking stuff relentlessly isn't a great way to actually turn a profit.
Yeah. Yeah, my answer is pretty much Chris's. Like, Asian developers are saving the industry right now. They're holding it up because these Westerners aren't doing it. Not with shit like Concord, you know? And fucking Redfall and shit like that. Nonsense games. So I don't really have much to add to that. What about you, Carlos? What's a positive thing you say about the current state of gaming?
I think I'll go, since Tony went the direction of Chris, I'll go to the direction of Brett. Everybody who's listened to this show long enough knows my stance with gaming recently. And when I say recently, I mean starting with last generation.
You know.
And that's even gotten worse in this generation. I feel like everyone caught up to the train. But I will say, going with Brett's answer, I feel like even with this whole a large pile of crap that we get in the video game industry, there are a lot of great, I wouldn't say hidden, but, you know, gems that are worth taking with you for the rest of your life, in terms of your video game story. And, you know, I just talked about Elden Ring. Elden Ring might be one of the best games, if not the best game I've ever played, in my opinion. So I'll take that. Cyberpunk, I had to wait for it to get fixed. But after I played with it, when it was fixed, one of the greatest experiences I've ever had. Monster Hunter World, one of the best gaming experiences I've ever had. God of War Ragnarok, one of the best games I've ever played. You know, these are games that I would put in my top 50 if I were to make a list. And these are fairly recent games. They're not from the last 2 years, but they're from the last, you know, half decade to a little bit more. But, you know, they're fairly recent. So, yeah, even though, and here's the thing, video games has never been my main hobby. It might have been my main hobby for like a few years of my life, It's just always been, it's always been something that I did. So I don't really mind, or I don't really look down on not spending as much time playing video games as I used to. That just, that's not something that, you know, I lament. So I being able to play two or three video games a year, and all those three, four video games that I play that year being really positive, really significant, really great games that I'm supporting, that's all fine and dandy with me. I know that, you know, it's unlikely that we'll get a 2007 ever again, or 2017. So, you know, I have no qualms with, you know, just experiencing what we have, because I kind of made up my mind that that's how it's going to be. So with the fact that there are games worth playing these days, and honestly, you know, we talk about great video games from the past, you know, in the history of video games, you know, playing Elden Ring and having Elden Ring as a video game that came out in 2022 and being part of that pantheon for me, that is something to be proud about. You know, it's a game that I'm proud of, to have played. So, you know, that's my positivity.
Cool. Right, Manny, what's a positive thing you can say about the current state of gaming?
I mean, just the resurgence of voices, and, you know, that we haven't heard in a while, for some ever. I mean, you know, you have China actually coming out and doing a really significant looking, you know, like title that looks just as good as any of the big AAA companies in the States or Japan. Then you have a Korean game, which, you know, just with Stellar Blade. So it's like you're definitely seeing these sort of, you know, countries sort of that don't usually think of with gaming coming out with these very significant looking titles. That's the big two right for now. Like,
yeah.
I can't say that I'm really that excited for really anything that's, I mean, you know, Japan's doing their thing, you know, they're doing their thing, but I feel like I'm interested in more Japanese games than I am mostly Western games. So that's different for me now. Like, cool. I think those are the two big things right now.
Yeah.
So I definitely like to see some more Korean studios sort of coming out there and doing some things that, like, you know, you look at it, like the guy who created that game, right? You know, the last, I mean, like, next significant title that he had been a part of, which was Magna Carta. You know, like, that's a PlayStation 2 title. That guy has been working in the game industry for years, but that's the last of the sort of console games he had ever worked on, which is insane.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, cool. And then we got another question here. Thank you, foolish people. Kind of related to what we've been talking about. Do you guys have any thoughts on how video games have gotten to the point where it's no longer a primary hobby for a lot of people? I'm going to say this, Brett, you kind of touched on it. It's like you kind of have been getting these games that aren't really taking any risks. They're just kind of cookie cutter, repeating the same stuff. You know, and Chris, you know, to borrow one of yours, Applebee's of gaming. Every game needs to have everything in it, so you don't have a focused vision anymore. But when you try to make something for everybody, you make something for nobody. So that's a big deal right there. Just the fact that a lot, at least with the AAA space, you're not getting any, like, you are getting a new franchise every once in a while, but for the most part, it's just reiterations, remasters, remakes, safe shit, you know? That's been ruined. There's also, by the way, that's my safe answer, because there is something else I want to talk about, but I'm not going to get into it here, political shit. But that is a big problem. Again, our boy Sean Layton talked about this. These budgets are getting too damn high, you know, and it's not sustainable. You take 5 years to make a fucking game that costs $200-300 million. So you need to make it for as many people as possible for it to get your money back. But that's not always a guarantee. We've seen some epic failures lately, you know, especially when you're trying to taste a live service fucking dragon, you know. So, yeah, I guess to sum it all up, lack of innovation in the AAA space is a big contributing factor. People like me, I'm like, you know, I think I'm good, because I've mostly, the games I've played the most have been indie games as a game reviewer, but those games aren't for me. That's like me just eating fucking salmon and shit. Okay, maybe I can eat some good salmon, but I don't like salmon. It's just, you know, you can't get away from what you like. And indie games, that's where the real innovation comes, but they don't excite the people like the way a big AAA does. So yeah, it's just, they're too, you know, again, they're playing it too fucking safe. But this, we talked about this before, you know. What about the rest of you guys? What do you think is, you know, kind of hurting the industry right now, where people are not as excited about it as they used to be?
I'll go ahead,
Chris.
Carlos, you go first.
I've mentioned this plenty of times during previous podcasts. I just feel like games are not made from inspiration. They're made more for profit. I mean, back in the day, it was just a whole bunch of nerds making video games that were passionate about making video games. The John Carmacks, the Kojimas, the, you know, even David Jaffe's of the world, and Gliffy B, and all those people. Like, it was just a whole bunch of people that coalesced and joined this medium that was still really new to make video games. That's something that were passionate. And then these were people, not only they created the stories, they also developed the games, like made the code and, you know, created the framework for the game. And it was a whole bunch of people that were multi-talented and then did it just because they were passionate about making video games. But now it's a business. It's more of a business. And in most of the games that people make are made, and you guys mentioned this early in the show, it's made by committees for the most part. If the video game doesn't have XXXX, you know, microtransactions, loot boxes, this multiplayer or whatever, if it doesn't have that, then by definition, it can't be successful, according to them. And that's just one of the reasons why video games are not that successful anymore. It's not successful in terms of us appreciating them like we used to. They're not made by creatives who have, you know, visions of making a world. It's more of, you know, more of a committees with visions of making money. And, you know, obviously there was always a profit motive for these creators even in the beginning, but these days it's mostly just that. You do have your exceptions, like there always is, but, you know, it's a gaming is there's a reason why video games has become the most successful medium out there, the most profitable medium out there, and that's where the fucking sharks come in, and we're infested by a whole bunch of sharks right now.
All right, what about the rest of you guys? What do you think is making gaming not as exciting for some people? Actually, Chris, you were going to go, right? So go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say I agree with you with the kind of the stagnation of creativity, like execs wanting to play it safe, moving towards live services away from big narrative-driven stories, you know, microtransactions, things like that. Just people are just burnt out, you know, on that crap. And if they can't find anything just as simple, you know, easy to get into. It's like, oh, I need loot boxes, need all this shit, need battle passes and season passes and all this stuff. It's like, nobody wants that shit anymore. You know, it's like, can we just go back to when you bought the game and you got like a complete experience? It's fine to get DLC, but this like effort to create a giant game and then chop it up into pieces and block it behind season passes and battle passes, whatever. It's just exhausting and people don't want to deal with this shit anymore. Now, some people do. Some people like it, but I don't. Most don't. I don't. And I think once you just get the same thing over and over again, like I know people, I often say people don't like change, but you only take that so much. You can only watch the same movie or listen to the same song or play the same game over and over again before you're like, I need something different, right? But the AAA guys aren't giving that to you because they think that's what you want. And they're just going to keep churning that out year after year. So people move to indie titles and, you know, AA and all this stuff. And that's why those are expanding and booming. Like I see a whole bunch of indie games exploding now on the market. Like, and they're actually pretty good. I mean, they're not polished or anything, but they're actually decent. So there's that. And then there's narrative ruining things. I don't know, a certain company, let's call them Saccharine Infant, which is pushing kind of ideology into the narratives of certain games. That could be a problem. Could be why we're looking to Asia for our salvation in that.
So far they've done a pretty good job of that, you know. Right. Anybody else? Brett, any thoughts on why gaming has kind of fallen off with some people?
Shareholders.
All right. You could expand on that if you want. Although I think it says it all. Yeah, to be honest.
Yeah, just like shareholders mean that without shareholders, like Baldur's Gate, for example, right? Like they're just happy that the game sold as well as it did. They would have been happy with 10% of that. They, you know, it's, there wasn't a super high bar they had to hit, and as such, they didn't have to make a lot of decisions that would have drained the creativity out of that game by having to chase after a bigger audience. And by doing that, they got to focus on the quality and the love of what they wanted to do. And turns out the big audience, you know, showed up for that. So I think a lot of times, even with the problem with, you know, shareholders, is it's not about doing good enough. It's about doing better than last time. Bold pinfall hat like that creates this weird, ever-hungry, amalgamous thing that is not responsible to anybody and is never satisfied, which is like this weird Eldritch Cthulhu-esque horror in my book. Like, just the whole thing of shareholders is a weird, horrifying concept if you think about it too hard. But it tends to drive creative bankruptcy. You know, all the things that we're talking about, I feel, can be brought directly back to shareholders being shareholders. Good is never good enough, because otherwise we might just have a bunch of really great companies making really great games that, you know, sometimes really great was good enough. They didn't have to try and be Fortnite instead.
Yeah. And to your point, you know, we previously mentioned how we really love Celebrate, but a lot of people were very upset when Shift Up became publicly traded, you know, like about a month ago, because now they feel like, oh, fuck, shareholders are going to come in and possibly fuck things up, you know, so we'll see.
That's a very, very real possibility.
Yeah. I mean, those people are right to be worried, man, so we'll see. All right. I think that's going to do it for us. Another good show. And, you know, we actually came in close to an hour and a half, which is kind of always my minimum goal. So I'm happy about that. All right, Manny, what you got?
Right now, I mean, everything's out in the field. You'll just go to your local comic book store, Ninja Turtles number 1 and 40th Anniversary of Ninja Turtles all on the shelves. So that's it for now.
Good stuff. And even though Rich isn't here, make sure you follow The Coalition, thecoalition.com, that's Coalition with a K. And also hit up The Coalition over on the YouTubes for more content, people, you know. I don't know what they have coming up, but, you know, it's always good stuff over there on The Coalition. Yeah, shout out to you guys. Shout out to Otaku Man, Foolish Pupil, Kiss Shack, Barry Burton, you know, Dumeke, and all the guys holding it down in the chat, you know. Anyway, we're done here, so make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Join the Discord with the conversations. The rumors are always popping. You could also find Throwdown on any podcast app. That's Throwdown Show, two words, Throwdown Show. ThrowdownShow.com to listen to past episodes. And if you are watching us on YouTube, like Reggie Butler is right now, he goes, RJD, baby. He's happy about the Dr. Doom store news, obviously. So yeah, if you're watching us on YouTube, like the video, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified of when we go live. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
And Brett Murdoch.
Deuces.
All right. Until Thursday, we will say bye, bye, bye. So we will see you then. Later.
Peace. Hey.